Hey, Justin, what's up?
Not much, Jimmy. Hashtag chilling. What's up with you?
Just been busy working. Hashtag rise and grind. Hashtag is it Friday yet?
Hey, check it out. I brought you some cookies. Hashtag homemade. Hashtag oatmeal raisin. Hashtag show me the cookie.
Sweet. Hashtag don't mind if I don't. Pretty good. Hashtag getting my cookie on. Hashtag I'm the real cookie monster. Hashtag no, 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 no.
Delicious, right? Yeah. Hashtag I did it all for the cookie. Hashtag LOL.
Hashtag classic. By the way, did you catch last week's episode of Duck Dynasty? Hashtag quack, quack.
Nah, lately I've mostly been watching Netflix. Hashtag orange is the new black.
Oh, nice. I've been watching a lot of Barney the Dinosaur. Hashtag purple is the new black. Hashtag I love you, you love me, we're a happy family. Hashtag I'm 38. Hashtag dinosaurs. Hashtag how do they go extinct? Hashtag meteor. Hashtag ice age. Hashtag speaking of ice age, I just watched Ice Age on demand the other day. Hashtag funny. Hashtag Ray Romano. Hashtag Deborah. Hey, by the way, Halloween's only like a month away.
I know.
I mean, do you know where you're gonna be at? Hashtag life decisions, hashtag sexy ghost.
I think I'm gonna go as a ninja turtle. Hashtag gotta be Raphael. Hashtag Leonardo sucks. Hashtag the turtle, not the Italian Renaissance painter. Hashtag Mona Lisa. Hashtag is she smiling? Hashtag speaking of smiling, I just saw my dentist. Hashtag bling. Hashtag dental care. Hashtag cavity free. Hashtag that's how we do. Hashtag we go hard. Hashtag and we can't stop.
Hashtag we won't stop.
Hashtag we run this.
Hashtag true players for life.
Hashtag is it worth it or let me work? Get.
Hashtag put my thing down, flip it, then reverse it.
Hashtag, it's your women in the band, yeah. Hashtag, it's your women in the band, yeah.
Goodness gracious.
Goodness gracious. Goodness. I'm glad you asked. On Twitter, let's do a little survey. How many of you would say you have ever heard of Twitter before? Put your hands up, okay. How many of you have ever been on Twitter before? How many of you have your own Twitter account? How many have no clue what I'm talking about? Nice. Twitter is a social media thing. As you can read in your bulletin, this idea, like, email had its day and email still has its function, but really, to be a part of email, like if you fill out a guest card and you want information from our church, then you'll get on our email list. If you don't put your name on the card, then we won't send you any emails because we honestly don't know what your email address is. And we could try to guess it, but it'd be a lot like this video, a lot really confusing and work it, flip around and reverse it. Because it's weird, right? But on Twitter is this place where you can create this account, and every day, do you guys know there's 140 million tweets every single day on average? That's just people putting out there. It goes anywhere from the most ridiculous things ever to pictures of just the worst things to pictures of, hey, here's what I'm having for dinner. Like, the people who follow me want to know what I'm having for dinner. So here it is. Who picked that? Put it out there. Send it out there. Now Vinny knows that I have a chili dog, no ketchup, extra relish, two onions, not three. But now you guys know that. Or for me, like every morning when I get up, I get out my Bible and I do my time reading, and then I spend probably the next hour reading other articles online. Now I could go to all of these places and try to find them, or I could just open up my handy dandy Twitter app and I can follow all of these people, and every day all of their things come to me, and I can say, ugh, Pastor Jay wrote about this today, I don't care. Ooh, Matt wrote about this today. Like, there are some groups that I follow, the Gospel Coalition, Together for the Gospel, Velocity is a church planting network, ARC. These are church planting networks to help me learn how to do things and grow. Okay, we've made it to here, what do we do to go to the next step? Now, there are things, there are articles that people are posting, and I think, oh, we're not quite there yet, so I'll save that one, I'll favorite it, so that I can see it later. Now, why are we talking about all of this? Oh, you asked what this was. On Twitter, there's a thing, if you put the pound sign in front of words, and you can't put spaces, because it's all got to be together. So, hashtag, what would Jesus tweet? And you could click on that, and you could see what other people have said about the same subject. Or hashtag church, or hashtag God, or hashtag, like Matt takes a picture every week inviting his friends to come to church, and he hashtags church. So you could click that hashtag of church, and you can see what other people have said about church. Or if you go to a conference, you can see what other people are saying about that. So why are we talking about Twitter? Aren't this is church? Aren't we supposed to talk about the Bible? You'd say that was the point, right? Well, what we want to do is follow up our last series called The Spirit of Adoption. We kind of wrap that series up with a really hot drink. That's hot. If you missed our Spirit of Adoption series, you can catch it on cityviewchurch.tv/media. You can go back and watch the whole series. But we ended the series looking at Matthew chapter 25, and Jesus has some really, really hard things, but really easy things all at the same time. And he says, he divides people into two groups, some on the left, some on the right. And he says to this side, you come and enter the kingdom of heaven, because when you saw me hungry, you brought me something to eat. When you saw me thirsty, you gave me something to drink. When you saw me sick, you visited me. When I was in prison, you visited me. When I was homeless, you invited me into your home. And they said, God, when did we see you like that? Jesus, when did we see you hungry and bring you food? And he said, when you have done it unto the least of these, you've done it to me. And then he says to the group on the other side, depart from me into the fires that were prepared for the devil, because you saw me hungry and you brought me no food. You saw me thirsty and you brought me no drink. I was homeless and you didn't invite me. And I was sick, I was in prison and you didn't visit me. And they said the same thing. Jesus, when did we see you like this? And he says, when you've done it unto the least of these, you've done it unto me. And so we talked about how we're all called to adoption. In the whole series, we talked about spiritual adoption, how we are brought into the family of God through the cross of Jesus. And now God has given us a mission to look out for those who don't have families. And, you know, not a lot of us can't bring kids into their home, but there's something we can do to help the least of these. And we thought, how else could we follow that series up than to see some of Jesus' other teachings on how we live our lives where we're not the center of our own focus? And so what we want to do is get your Bible, flip to Matthew chapter 5. If you don't have a Bible with you, there's one in the pew in front of you. While you're flipping there, I'm going to take a quick survey. How many of you would say you know, just raise your hand, no need to yell it out. How many of you, raise your hand if you know the golden rule? Have you ever heard the golden rule? Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. All right, how many of you know the Lord's Prayer? All right, keep your hands up. Everybody hands, if you've heard the Lord's Prayer, put your hand down if you are, forgive us our debts. Keep your hand up if you're trespasses. Good, good, good. Debtors is wrong, guys. Just kidding. Yeah. It's different translations of the same thing. Just wanted to see which camp we all fell in. So you guys know the Lord's Prayer. How many of you have heard the story about God or Jesus telling people that if your son came to you and asked for bread, how many of you would give him a snake? You ever heard that story? Great man, you've heard that story. And then he finishes it up by saying, if you know how to give good gifts, how much more does your Father in heaven know good gifts? Raise your hand if you knew that all of those stories came from Matthew chapter 5, 6, and 7, and what we call the Sermon on the Mount. If you were of us. So what we want to do is we want to circle our wagons around Matthew chapter 5, 6, and 7 over the next 3 months. We're going to go 3 months through three chapters of the Bible just to see what Jesus says about how we live our lives. You know, back in that day, kind of the reason for the Twitter analogy is verse 1, it says this. Seeing the crowds, he went up to the mountain, and when he sat down, his disciples came to him. And back in that day, people would see their teacher, they would come to him, he would sit down, they would sit at his feet, gather close, and he would teach them. We live in a world of hustle and bustle, and who has time to sit down at the feet of their teacher anymore? Remember, if you've got enough time to sit down, come up here, sit down on my feet for the rest of the afternoon while I teach you something. Another survey, raise your hand. Ain't nobody got time for that. Hashtag, I went down for a cold pop. So what we wanted to do is say we live in this world where we just don't have much time to kind of circle our wagons around hearing from our teachers. So if Jesus were alive today, what if he took to Twitter to teach us the things that he had to say? What's interesting about that is on Twitter, you're not allowed to just write forever. If you've got your Bible open, look how long this is, the blue section. This is just today. Just today, we're going to go through these 12 verses. But on Twitter, you're only allowed to use 140 characters. Commas, spaces, periods, those count as characters. So if Jesus were to say what we're going to read today on Twitter, this is what it would look like. Blessed are the poor in spirit, the sad, the meek, the hunger for righteousness, the pure in heart. You see how the heart, we don't got room for the whole word heart, but we can do a less than or greater than three. We can make a heart, right? Blessed are the pure in heart, the peacemaker. Ooh, we lost a couple of vowels. The persecuted, be glad for your reward is, Tony the Tiger, great in heaven. So if Jesus were to say these 12 verses to us on Twitter, it would say this. Now, as I kind of put this on paper, I thought of something that was really kind of interesting here. As you read these things that God is pronouncing these blessings over these kind of people, it kind of looks like maybe it's a buffet. Like maybe I can pick and choose, and I'll be meek. That seems easy, and I can be merciful. No one wants to be poor in spirit, right? Another survey, raise your hand if you want to be poor in spirit. Nobody? How many of you want to mourn? The buffet, right? But when you read it like that, it's just a string of words. And I think what God is calling us to is he wants us to pursue all of these things because that is where his heart is. So this is kind of an introduction to the entire Sermon on the Mount. So what Jesus does is he says, here's what I'm about to tell you. Really confusing. Not sure any of us understands. Let me explain it. And then he takes the next few chapters to explain it. So today, we're just going to kind of get an introduction to where we're headed for the rest of the summer. Before we do that, I want to introduce you guys to three errors that are common in the interpretation of the Sermon on the Mount. There are ways to look at this that make sense, but they are not right. They're not, and how do we know whether it's right or wrong? We have to take what we read and see if it is in keeping with the character of God and see if it's in keeping with the rest of the Bible. If we read something here and say, this means this, but it contradicts this, then it cannot mean this. So here are three things, three errors that come with interpreting the Sermon on the Mount. The first one is that these teachings have no bearing on our life today. Jesus is talking about inheriting the kingdom. And what we know is that the kingdom hasn't been completed yet. We know that Jesus came to earth, lived the life we could never live, died the death we fully deserved, rose to life. Now he's ascended to heaven. But the kingdom is not here and now. It's not completed because he hasn't come back for his saints. And so this is not a teaching for today. This is a teaching about how we should live once we get to heaven. This is how things will be when we get to heaven. Well, the problem is that the apostles saw that this was necessary for today. That's why we spent the first 15 weeks of this year looking at the book of 1 Peter. And Peter challenged us more than one time to watch the way that we live our life. Live your life so that other people look at you and they see God. Live your life in such a way that people look at you, they see God, and they make fun of you for it. And he says a third time, live your life in such a way that people see God, they make fun of you for it, you don't change, and they want to know why you're different. And so we're supposed to live our life different. So the first error is that this teaching doesn't have any bearing on our life today. This teaching has bearing on our life every single day. The second error is that people teach this as a new declaration of the law. In the Old Testament, Moses was given the Ten Commandments. Thou shalt not, ten of them. Right? That was the law. We were incapable of keeping those, and so we needed Jesus to come and be our righteousness, that he would die on the cross for our sins. That's necessary, right? Now they're telling, there are some that would teach that Jesus is saying, here's more things to do to show you how impossible it is to keep God's standard, pointing us to our need for him on the cross. It does all of those things, but that's not why he was doing it. We'll get to why here in a minute. But this is not a new declaration of the law, pointing us to our need for the cross. It is just a way for us to live, to pursue looking like Jesus. And the third error that comes is that the sermon, this Sermon on the Mount, is just a social gospel. There are some that would teach that there is no need for a relationship with Jesus. I don't need to get up in the morning and read my Bible. I don't need to pray. I don't need to go to church. I don't need to do anything. I just need to live my life like this says. And so if I can live my life giving to the needy, if I can live my life praying in private so that no one sees it, if I can live my life doing these things, then I'll be right with God. And the only problem with that is that nothing outside of the relationship with Jesus, your acknowledgement that Jesus' death on the cross, his burial, and his resurrection, nothing outside of that makes you right with God. Nothing good inside of yourself makes you right with God. Only Jesus. And so I had this picture this weekend we've recently become foster parents, and one of our kids, she just doesn't want to have anything to do with what we ask her to do. She has set her mind to doing a certain thing. And as I was kind of preparing to teach, I realized that this error in interpretation, that this is a sermon, this was just a sermon about the social gospel. We just live the way of Jesus with no need for a relationship with Jesus. It is completely impossible for us to live like Jesus did without a relationship with him. This little girl doesn't want to do what I ask her to do because she's been in several foster homes over the last 7 months. She doesn't know how long I'm going to be in her life. She has no trust, no relationship with me. Why should I follow your rules? I'm just going to be in somebody else's house following their rules later. So what it's taking is me learning how to communicate with her and talk the language that she understands. It's not, you need to go do, but it's kneeling down and getting on her level and saying, hey, if you do this, you're going to get this. But if you do this, I think we can do this. Because as it stands right now, if I said, I want you to go over there and get 78 pieces of candy out of that bowl, and I want you to eat every single piece of candy, and then when you're done, I want you to go get 78 more, and I want you to eat candy until your tummy hurts. Now, what kid do you know would say no to that? I know one. I promise you, I know one. But if I told her, hey, if you do this, maybe we can get some candy. Now I'm learning to talk to her because it's relationship. It's learning to talk her language. So this is not just a live the way of Jesus, ignore relationship with Jesus. This is find a way to be in relationship with Jesus. And as you do, you learn to speak the same language. And that language is that this thing isn't about me. This thing is about others. And the more I'm in relationship with him, the more he and I learn to talk the same language, the more I want to do the things that he wants me to do. We can't ignore our relationship. That is the crux. It is the center of all that we have. The cross of Christ gives us the opportunity to be in a relationship. So now what we'll do is we'll go to this whole Sermon on the Mount, the Beatitudes. How many of you know what the Beatitudes means? Don't tell me. I like to say these things to make you think I'm smart. And if you say it, then I don't think it's smart. So what we'll do is read chapter 5, verses 2 through 12. And then we'll go back through and just talk about it. We'll just kind of take them apart a little bit. And he opened his mouth and he taught them, saying, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And blessed are you when others revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven. For so they persecuted the prophets who were before you. So these are called the Beatitudes, and they're called the Beatitudes because the Latin verb sometimes these things were written in Latin. The Latin word is beati, which means blessed. So these are the blessitudes or the beatitudes. Speaking in terms of blessing over people or speaking in terms of woe over people was a very common way to address a crowd, especially from the Old Testament. As you read through the Old Testament, the prophets are told by God to pronounce this. And so some of these things would be woe. How many of you remember the story of Jonah? Right? Jonah and the big whale get swallowed up, spit out on the beach. Yay! Right? Jonah was told by God to go to Nineveh and pronounce doom over them for their sin. Did Jonah want to go? No. Why? Because Jonah knew that God was merciful, and he knew that the Ninevites were prone to repent when corrected. And so if I go and pronounce doom over them, they will repent, God will be merciful, and I'll look like an idiot. I'm not interested in looking like an idiot, so rather than go this way, I'm catching a boat and going this way. When you catch a boat going this way, when God says go this way, you find yourself thrown overboard, swallowed by a fish, and spit out on the very beach you were supposed to land on, right? So it was very common for the prophets to pronounce woe over them. The prophet would pronounce doom or prosperity, or what we call oracles of woe or oracles of well. He would speak woe over them or well, which I'm not sure that's what that word is, but I copied it out of the book. It doesn't look like what it would mean. But, so Jesus would pronounce woe over the scribes and the Pharisees 7 times in Matthew chapter 23. Check this out. 7 times he said, woe to you, scribes, Pharisees, and he called them hypocrites. Woe to you, you people who say do this, but do that. Remember the story of Jonah? Go this way? Oh yeah, go that way. That way. Woe to you, people who say one thing but do another. And then he says, woe to you, you blind guides. Woe to you people who stand up in front of people like you have it all together, like you know where you're leading people, but you have no idea where you're going because you're so blinded by your own self-righteousness. That's what Jesus pronounces woe over that. He's now pronouncing blessings over this kind of people. Woe to you who are hypocrites. Woe to you who lead people like you know what's going on, but don't. Blessing to you who are pure in heart, who hunger and thirst for righteousness. In Psalm chapter 1, Psalm starts out like this. Check this out. Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the wicked, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits at the seat of scoffers, but his delight is in the law of the Lord. And on his law he meditates day and night. Leave that up there for a second, Tripper. You see, there is this blessing, and then there is a qualification. You are blessed when you do. So I guess the opposite would have to be true, right? Woe to you who does not walk in the counsel of the wise. Or woe to you who walk in the counsel of the wicked. Woe to you who stand in the way of sinners. Woe to you who sit at the seat of scoffers. Your delight is not in the law. You don't ever think about his thoughts for your life. So there is this blessing that he is speaking. So Jesus is speaking this blessing over us if we can find ourselves in this. They all start with blessed. There's a number of them. And then there is, if you do, then you get. Let's try to figure out what he's saying. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And at first glance, it looks like Jesus is saying, if you've got any sort of financial means, then you don't get to inherit the kingdom of heaven. Because over in Luke chapter 6, it doesn't say blessed are the poor in spirit. It says blessed are the poor. So is having money a sin? Having money isn't a sin. It's where that money terminates. Is all of this money coming in to expand your life? Is all of this money coming in so that you can have a better quality of life? Or is this coming in so that... But this is not what he's saying. He's not saying that he's calling us to poverty. What he's saying is, blessed are you who are poor in spirit, or blessed are you who have a poverty of self. Blessed are you who have a poverty of arrogance. Jesus was constantly being attacked by the scribes and Pharisees. These people, like I said, who stood there like they have it all together. We know everything. You need to follow us because we understand the Old Testament scriptures, the way that God has told us to live. We understand them in a way you do not, and you need to come. And so what we're going to see later is that these people go, when it's time to give their offering, they go to the black box in the back of the room. And they would drop it in so that people knew that they were given a lot. Or it, when it was time for them to go fast, they would walk around. I'm so holy. I haven't eaten in days. I've been constantly praying. Look at me. Look to my holiness. Seek to be like me. But was their holiness about them? Should our holiness be about ourselves? No. And so, blessed are those who are poor in spirit. Blessed are you when you understand that there is not one redeeming thing about you. Blessed are you when you look to God and realize that the connection between you and Him is broken by your sin and you are completely incapable of fixing that gap. Blessed are you when you understand that Jesus is the only way to make that connection. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are you when you are so broken up over your sin that you are brought to tears, that you can do nothing else but weep and say, God, save me. I cannot save myself. Yeah, there are some that think, but if I do enough good things, that's where we get this social gospel thing. This is why this can't be true. If I do enough things, if I help this guy get off drugs, and if I can help this family who doesn't have enough food, and if I can help this, and then I can help them, I will have stacked up enough relationship credibility with God that I can stand, and maybe I can reach where He is. No, blessed are you when you realize that there's not one thing that you can stack on another to reach God. Blessed are you when you realize that the punishment of that is eternal separation from God that causes you to weep and cry out. Blessed are you who are meek. Now, commonly meekness is seen as weakness. Right? How many of you work with somebody who is constantly preferring others? You go first. You can go. And how many of you work with somebody who takes advantage of that person? Meekness and weakness are not the same thing. Meekness is understanding that there is a time and a place to say everything, but there is a way to say everything. Remember the story about the candy bowl. If I tell her, go get 78 pieces of candy and eat them, I can tell her how to do, but I have to understand. I have to be so humble that I know that telling her how to do life is not right, but if I can come down to her level, and I can talk to her in a way that she understands. If you do this, Jesus was a man of infinite strength. He was God that didn't see that equality with God was something to be grasped. That's Philippians chapter 2, here on this planet. So He humbled Himself to the point of a servant. So this Jesus, all the power in the universe, healing people, growing limbs back. There are times where He speaks words and healing happens. But there are times where He realizes that His power is not best displayed in lording it over them by speaking it in, but my power would be best displayed if I went down to my knees. If I spit in the mud, if I spit in the dirt and made some cakes of blood and I placed it on this blind guy's eyes. Sometimes strength means getting your hands dirty. That's where you see meekness. So blessed are you when you realize that there's nothing redeeming about you and your need for Jesus is great. Blessed are you when you realize that the consequences of your sin is death, and that brings you to tears because you need Jesus to step in. Blessed are you when you are meek, when you are humble enough to step back and say, it can't be about me. Blessed are you when you hunger and thirst for righteousness, for you'll be satisfied. But we live in America, and we don't really understand starvation, hunger, like there are places in this world. Dude, you know, in America, 17,000 kids every day go to bed hungry because they didn't get three meals. 30,000 children will die on planet Earth today because they didn't have enough food to eat. And when Jesus is talking, he's talking to a group of people who live in a culture that is surrounded by the desert. And so for them to go to grandma's house isn't just a 20-minute car ride. To go to grandma's house means we got to pack up stuff, and we got to spend 2 weeks walking through the desert. And so for us to do that, I have to load up the mule with enough water. But what happens on day 10 of a 14-day walk when you run out of water? Knowing that you're 4 days away from satisfaction. Jesus is talking to people who would understand what it means to be thirsty. You and I can go to the tap and turn the water on. They lived in a culture where they had to go to a well and draw it out. They had to walk to the middle of town. So blessed are you when righteousness is so necessary in your life that you cry out for it, that you can only be satisfied by it. Which leads us to the humility to realize I can't do anything for myself, which leads me to the tears that I cry because I can't do it, because I realize that Jesus did it all for me. And once you can understand those four things, then you can start to live your life differently. So then we see these together. After you understand where you are in relationship to God and how you get to them, then blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Who wants to see God? I do. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the sons of God. That's what our whole last series was about, the spirit of adoption, where we are invited in to the family of God as co-heirs with Christ. We are now sons of God, with all the rights and privileges that come with that. Blessed are the peacemakers. Jesus came to make peace between you and God. We are supposed to live our life, this big church word called sanctification. What that means is the process of us becoming into the image of Jesus. And Jesus told us, if anyone has seen me, they've seen the Father. So sanctification is the process of us looking like God. God is the grand peacemaker through the cross of Christ. So blessed are you when you make peace, because peace was made with you. You'll be invited in as sons of God. Blessed are you who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. You know, in my Bible, I'm a writer. And during the first service, I said I'm a Bible writer, which is patently false because I didn't write the Bible. So I'm not a Bible writer. I'm a writer in the Bible. I'm a Bible with a writer in it. But there are things that I want to make sure that you hear. There are things that I go and I hear somebody else's teaching and I want to remember. And so I write in my Bible. So all of these, I circle the word. And I realized last night as I was kind of teaching through it, I circled, blessed are you, blessed are those who are persecuted. Like, blessed are you when you're made fun of. Blessed are you when you're laughed at. Blessed are you when you are left out. But I didn't circle the rest of it. Blessed are you who are persecuted for righteousness' sake. Not blessed are you when you're left out. You might have heard me tell the story about how in high school I was the church kid. Between the hours of 8:30 and 3:30, I was everybody's friend. Everybody liked me. I fit in all the circles. After 3:30, I didn't fit into any of the circles because I was known as the church kid. I was never even invited to a party where I could make a bad choice because people just knew. So I could look and say, look, I was persecuted. I was left out and abandoned by those because they knew that I was a church kid. When the reality of it was I was left out because I went to church all the time. Because if I had gone to those parties with them, I would have done exactly what they did. I just was never given the opportunity. So I wasn't persecuted for righteousness' sake. I was persecuted for the appearance of righteousness. So is he saying, blessed are you when you get up on Sunday morning and people make fun of you because you could have slept in? Blessed are you when you choose not to go watch this movie because you don't agree with the content. Blessed are you when they make fun of you because you won't listen to AC/DC, you'll listen to lame Christian music. Which is a whole other topic about Christian music being lame. Well, that's somebody's opinion. But I didn't circle for righteousness' sake. And I think it's because I haven't quite grasped the top. There is a certain level of humility that I struggle with every single day. I want people to make fun of me for being different. But I don't actually want to be different. I do, but sometimes I don't. I want it to look like I'm different. Let's read through a book that we are walking through with people one-on-one called Multiply. It's about making disciples out of people. Not just converts, not people who have just prayed some kind of prayer and have identified themselves with Jesus, but people who are having their lives changed to look like Jesus. And in it, there's a section about reading the Bible, and it asks, have you ever read the Bible with a wrong motivation? And it lists three examples, and then one of the questions are there any more? And the three examples that are in the book are, have you ever read the Bible? Have you ever studied the Bible? Not to hear from God, but so that you can gain status. Meaning, the answer to that question was yes. There have been times in my life where I have gone to the scriptures to study and try to understand them so that I can go to a small group and I can spew out wisdom so people can look at me and say, look at that. Greg must really know God. He must really have this vibrant, life-giving relationship with God. No, there have been times in my life where I study this thing so that you are impressed with my ability to communicate. The third one was, have you ever just found yourself studying the Bible only to teach it as a Sunday school teacher or a pastor? Now, I'm going to be honest with you. There are times in my life, this last week, where our life was chaos. I read my Bible reading plan every day, but I can't tell you that I read it to really understand and hear it. But I will tell you that I read this every day so that I could communicate this to you, so that you would look at me and say, wow, thanks for communicating to that. My picture of God is bigger. When in reality, over the last 7 days, my life has been chaos. And my pursuit of God has been purely to make sure that you don't come to church and feel like you were cheated. You didn't come to church thinking, oh, well, I wish the pastor had prepared a sermon. So are there times when I do that? Yeah. I don't want to. I want to hear from God. And so I guess this is a moment of confession to you. Is sometimes I get made fun of for being a Christian, but only because it looks like I'm a Christian. Not because I spend every day of my life trying to look more like Jesus. And that's the point of what this whole thing is about. Jesus is pointing this sermon to us to help us see that living our life, terminating on us, ending in our own pleasure, is of no value. Living your life so that other people see Him in you is the ultimate value. Because at the end of life, you can't take anything with you. False. There's only one thing you can take with you when you go. You know what it is? Other people. There's not one commodity on this planet that when you die will go with you. But if I can introduce somebody to the life-giving message of Jesus Christ on the cross, they get to go to heaven with me. The only thing that you can take with you is other people. Which is why Jesus is telling us that you, when you live your life all about you, you won't be satisfied. You won't find yourself a son of God. You won't inherit it. Yours won't be the kingdom of heaven. But when you realize that the picture that Jesus left us, the example, was that we lay our life. Greater love has no man than this, that he would lay down his life for his friends. So we wrap this whole thing up this morning with communion. Communion could be, for some of us, just what we do because it's the first Sunday of the month. And that's what we do around here. Or maybe this morning communion could be different. Maybe we could come to the table and we could take the bread and we could break off our piece, realizing that we played a part in the breaking of the body of Christ. Without my sin, Jesus didn't need to die. So I played a role in his death. And his blood was shed because my sin was black as blood covered me so that I could be white as snow. And I grew up in Texas, and I understand the analogy. There was soft snow. Now I get it. Now I understand. I've shoveled a whole lot of it out of my driveway this year. And by I mean my wife. She loves shoveling. And if she doesn't, don't tell me. But you know what I noticed? I noticed that there was this slush that was thrown over the snow. You see, we were born into this world. Just a little baby with no sin. But the consequence of us living life is that we encounter the dirt, the dust, the filth of this world. And it covers us completely. And Jesus comes in with his body broken and broken. His blood flowing down so that we can be made clean again and whole. And no one can ever take that from us. So we wrap our time up every week by just bowing our heads and closing our eyes. Just the opportunity to think about what we've heard. So I wonder this morning, as I look around, I see that most of us have some sort of context for church, some sort of frame of reference for God. But I worry often that our context, our frame of reference for God, has been the end of the world. I go to church. I grew up going to church. I know all of the stories. I've heard it all. I raised my hand one time and prayed a prayer to be made whole. But I'm afraid that maybe we're missing the point. The point isn't to raise our hand and identify ourselves with God, but it is to allow him to change us, to bring a purity of heart, to bring this sickening feeling of sin, to make us hunger and thirst for righteousness. And I know that I go through times in my life where I don't. I want to. I weep over my sin all the time. And I'm afraid that some of us have grown up in here, and we know the stories, and we know the actions, and we know what to do so well, that when we get to heaven, he says, "Depart from me, because I was sick and you didn't visit me. I was in prison and you didn't come. I was hungry, I was thirsty, and you didn't help satisfy my need." Because we are so busy just being. We are so busy fulfilling our role and our need to feel like we're doing something to be right. But we actually don't ever get the picture that this isn't about us. Jesus was constantly at the Pharisees because they thought that they had gained right standing with God because of the things they had done. And I'm terrified. I go to bed every night worried that we're not leading people to understand that it's not about what you do, but it is about what Jesus has done. And so I wonder this morning if anyone needs to join me with raising their hand and saying, "Sometimes I have the wrong picture of what I'm supposed to be. Sometimes I have the wrong picture of what I'm supposed to do. And I want more of him. I need less of me." And if that's you this morning, I'm going to count to three and I'd like for you to raise your hand. One, I'm going to put my hand up. Two, three. I'm just going to pray a simple prayer. You can put your hand down. I saw you. Just going to pray a simple prayer. This isn't a magical prayer over you. This is just a prayer for me. But maybe you could take this prayer, make it your own. Repeat it every day. Find a way. And God, as we begin this series, just trying to gather at your feet and hear what you would have for us. I realize that my history, I realize that my experience with the church sometimes leaves me with a wrong picture of who I am and a wrong picture of who you are. This will help me every day, God, to hunger and thirst for righteousness. I thank you so much for Jesus' sacrifice for me so that I could have a purity of my heart. I need more of you. I want, I love you. I don't want to just come to church. I don't want to just pick up my Bible and read it because I'm supposed to. But I want to know you. I want to know how to look like you. Right with God is through the sacrifice of Jesus on your back as we sing you.